feels more normal now because we're back to some wintry, rainy, windy weather.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's more in keeping with the grimness.
The energy. The energy of this podcast is two people sitting outside in some fairly unpleasant conditions, just being martyrs to the podcast for some reason, choosing, like, we could go to one of our houses and do this, you know, that, or a little cafe.
Yeah, but you know what, people love it when we stop talking and talk about a thing that they can't see.
Really? You've had some feedback, have you? That is a
hundreds
highlight.
Of emails. Everybody's like, I love it when you stop talking and talk about an animal that I can't see.
Yeah.
That you both just stop and stare at and stop talking. That's that. They're like, please never stop that. That's the best bit of the podcast. Also, if you could eat more crisps when you're recording,
yeah,
that would be great.
I'm struggling now because there is an open bag of Tyrrell's sweet chili and red. Oh my gosh, sponsorship! It's Tyrrell's sweet chili and red pepper crisps, right?
Which are the best. How sponsorship works.
No, I know. I'm about. Let me finish my sentence. They're the best crisps in the world, and I'd say we've eaten these kind of during the podcast last 3 weeks. So maybe. They could.
Well, they've already got they've already got the promotion now, haven't they?
What? Yeah. Well, maybe I'll do it more. I'll do it more. I'm going to stop talking about it until they pay us some money.
Right. Great.
We've just had a weather warning come up on our phones, which is
Woo!
Nice. So we just had to send a message out saying, keep, you know, we're watching the skies. We may have to cancel a session.
And it's the difficulty of running, you know, cancelling a toddler group because of weather is like. That's a bit annoying, got to sort some refunds out. But it's a kindergarten day, it's a drop-off day that we're having to, you know, consider. And there's so much more mental load to go on. Oh, people have got to make alternative childcare arrangements. And, oh, and what if it isn't? And what if it is? And how can you compensate? And that's just a
You really don't want to cancel. You don't want to cancel, no, basically.
You really don't. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No.
We're here, well, so we were just saying that we think there's a few different names for this podcast, and we're not sure what the end it will be until we get to the end, and kind of, I don't know, I guess
when
at the
we've
end,
blathered on, we'll there'll be a focus there somewhere, but the initial idea was
deep play versus shallow play, and it was coping with boredom,
and then I've extended that to levels of engagement. And
well, you thought deep and shallow was a bit too binary. Would that be fair?
Yeah, or just some of the scenarios we just talked about, I think, are not necessarily to do with play. They're to do with just, like, engagement in general.
Okay. Well, I mean, I kind of... The reason that this came into my head is it's a thing that I have been aware of the last few years. When you get to whatever winter festival you celebrate, normally there's some... present giving involved, particularly for children, and there's been a shift away, I feel like, for a lot of families recently, what's the name of the kid in Harry Potter, his Dudley.
Yeah, Dudley,
and he's counting his presents and going, but last year I got 38 and this year it's 37, and that idea of like volume of gifts in one day, and that actually that doesn't encourage the best play or good play, but maybe that's not what I mean. What I mean is that kind of only facilitates shallow play, because it's a very high octane moving from thing to thing and only really asking. So the kind of definition that I like is shallow play is what does it do? And deep play is what can I do with it?
Yeah.
And so when children, you know, and that's not to say that either of them are bad, but that there should be a balance between the two. And so a lot of children, when they get gifts at Christmas and lots of gifts, like the deep play of what can I do with it is harder. It requires more input, requires more imagination, or, you know, thinking that, oh, maybe it's not just a thing, maybe it could be a tower as well, maybe it could be a whatever as well.
And it relies on a lot of time spent with that object, which you don't get if you've got a lot of objects, because your attention is shared out amongst them more. So if you only have three things available to you, then you're going to play with each thing for a longer amount of time, get bored with it, and therefore then start testing out new ways of doing with it.
Can I stand on it? Can it, you know, can it interact with this other object that I've got? Can it do whatever else? And I do think as well part of that is, you know, let's not pretend we live in a bubble. You know, we live in a world of advertising, and a lot of there's a valid statement, I think, that's, have you heard of the love languages?
Nope.
Have you heard of these? And it's like different ways that you show love, and sometimes people just misinterpret it. Mm-hmm. So one person's way of showing love might be, oh, they buy gifts for their significant other, but the other person, their love language is like time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and time together. So you have this mismatch of their going, well, I am showing them I love them because look, I bought them this and I bought them this. But if the other person isn't, you know, it's like you speaking mm-hmm. French to them and them going, but they're not speaking English. They're not saying they love me. And, you know, and I think there's seven in this theory, which is kind of interesting. But the point that I was going to say was, parents are just as, parents and gift givers, you know, grandparents, carers, whoever it is, are just as keen when children open the present for the first time to be like, look what it does. Let me show you because I've spent my money because of what it does, because mm-hmm. of what, you know. And so then I don't know, there's that pressure from outside to be like, use the toy or the thing how it's meant to be used. You know, if you bought your kid, I mean, Lego's a difficult example because Lego, you do whatever with it. But if you bought your kid a load of, I don't know, action figures from a recent film, and they started stacking them into a tower and not using the fact that they, I don't know, spin or fire guns or whatever, that's deep play because they're going, I'm going to stack these. They work quite well as bricks. But an adult might go, well, that's not what they're for. Let me show you how they work and do all this. And so that, yeah, the kind of festive period for me is quite an interesting time of deep play and shallow play.
Yeah.
That was a long waffle as to why we've got that.
There's a whole movement with the four present thing. Have you heard that?
Something to
wear,
aware of it, yeah.
Something you want, something you need, something to wear, something to read.
Mm-hmm.
And it being like a rationale so that then you can curb your own spending and buying, mm-hmm. and also maybe transmit that message to other friends and family,
mm-hmm.
And say we are doing this year, we are committing to this idea,
mm-hmm.
Which I was reading about yesterday.
Is the idea that you get each person four presents, or that you,
I think it's from parents to children, it's
you get
about
four
children,
right?
Yeah.
And then what you say to the outside families, can you get one of the four?
Well, this is the debate that was happening on the website I was reading last night. It's like,
right.
How do you then go beyond, so that's kind of in the near family,
mm-hmm.
And then how do you extend that idea out further to try and either transmit the message to other friends and family, we don't want any presents, mm-hmm. you can offer some time, you can offer like an experience of some kind, but we're trying to do this, or to just like curb the spending a little bit and curb the amount and say, well, we're doing this, she would love or he would love the book
part. I know one family they spread the gifts from fram, they sort of ask for everything up front on December 1st, mm-hmm. and they then spread it through December so that their daughter gets time to play with each thing for a couple of days and then all that, something new. And that's another way of, like, you know, we talk about getting through the winter with burnout, but getting through with for children and going, mm-hmm. there's another thing every couple of days. And then I think what they do is on Christmas Day they've keep something that is like a game to play with people or something, so that you're not, I mean, we're going off on a bit of a tangent about Christmas now, but that you're not, on Christmas Day, you are actually interacting with your children,
yeah.
rather than putting them in front of a pile of plastic and electronics and flashing lights, and then people go, and then maybe feeling like, no, we didn't really spend Christmas together, put your electronics away, and you go, and the kids quite rightly are going, you've just given this to me, I want to absolutely binge on it, you know, so, but that's where we're going, and that kind of gets me thinking about deep play and shallow play in forest school sessions, and how that kind of interacts. And the first thing, that sort of bullet point that I've written down, is that I do think it touches on perseverance that we were talking about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a very visceral, for me at least, a very visceral reaction if a child comes up to me and just goes, oh, I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a complete cop-out almost of just, You think for me.
I'm really interested in it, and I'm really interested in why that happens. And I've had it a couple of times here, but more often. Well, I'm going to link the "I'm bored" sentence with also what are we doing now.
Mm-hmm.
What what's next?
Yeah.
What shall I do? What should we do next? As a similar kind of like a moment where a person is at a loss for whatever reason. So I'm bored or I need instruction, I need guidance, I need a bit of input here from you. I'm fascinated as to why that happens, and I've had it more often on school sites where they've been in lessons all morning and then they're coming outside for a couple of hours in the afternoon on their school field.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of like, what are we doing now? And that comes from it being at school, I think, and it being, you are the teacher.
Well, this is one of the things I've written down, is the contrast between forest school timetabling and the rest of many children's lives, and linking that back to when we read the John Gatto stuff, and he's talking about how much of their lives is prescribed.
Yeah.
And it can be a really big shock.
Yeah.
If you...
And the Bob Hughes thing, it's just like the less time you give children to free play, the less they're able to do it. It's just not a skill that they possess. So it's, although it might be a little bit of a, as you kind of described, like a bit of an affront to you as in terms of your session and your planning and your prep and stuff and how you're running
it
the session.
It feels like an evaluation. It shouldn't. It's just you know, it's a statement about how they're feeling.
Yeah. And I think we know children that come to the woods regularly who started out with that kind of behaviour, kind of often saying like, so what's next? Or am I allowed to do this? Or, you know, that kind of thing, that hesitancy and that need for needing to know. And that can come from lots of different places as well. So whether it be a school thing or whether it be a thing because of additional needs that the child has.
Just being anxious, in a new place.
Absolutely. You know. And sometimes children do need supporting in that way and having like a visual timetable or some regular times to kind of come back together as a group and go, okay, such and such mentioned this, let's write that on the blackboard, let's remember to do that, so we'll do that then. And then you've always got that to kind of go back to for those participants that need it. And I think there are adults that need that too, because there are adults who come to our sessions, if they haven't been very often before, you kind of notice their anxiety through the way they talk to the children that they're bringing. So they might say, oh no, we've got to stop doing that now because remember Gemma and Lewis said we were going to make the thing now, so we've got to stop. No more time for that now because we've got to do this. That kind of thing. And so that is that kind of like, oh, I need to know where I am now, I need to know what's happening next. And that is fair enough. Or like, or adults coming to us and going, so you mentioned at the beginning that we were going to be doing some fire lighting. When precisely is that? Because I need to know exactly what time that's going to be. And you go, well, actually, I don't know. It depends. I'm feeling the vibe of the group. But it is a very unusual situation if you haven't been before. And I think most people, I hope, once they get to know it, appreciate it and value it as a more less structured time.
Yeah, it kind of... I think part of that timetabling, just thinking about it for adults, and a lot of us live our lives by a clock, you know, and a lot of us, that clock is our phone, and you know, our calendar has this time, and your day is dictated by time rather than by need. You know, the clock says it is 10 o'clock and therefore I must stop this activity because it is time for me to go and have a coffee, or go and, you know, to move on to this other invoice, or to do whatever else. And it's, you know, I'm a big fan of looking back and going, well, what's human life been like for, you know, a long time? And more of that is, you do it till it's done. And I think it kind of ties into two things. Of partly it's doing it till it's done and seeing a thing through to completion is really satisfying, you know, as for children. Quite often, if they do any sort of long-term projects in school, it's always cut by the bell and gone, well, that's as far as you've gone. It doesn't matter if you were perfectly in flow and it took you 45 minutes and you were just going to sail through. Actually, bang, you now have to do, you know, shift on a sixpence, and now you have to think about geography because that's the way the world is.
That does come back to the kind of long-term nature of forest school, doesn't it? Because if you have not had this opportunity to enter more immersive play, the flow state, the freedom, that accepting that you are free to do what you choose without the leader of the session telling you yes and no, you need that practice in order to understand that that is possible before you can even enter that state, don't you? If you don't have that in the rest of your life. And so if you're only dipping in and out of sessions and coming very occasionally or coming for a one-off session, you aren't going to understand that. And I think until you do, you don't really get forest school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't really understand it. You don't really understand that it's not like other toddler groups or it's not like a school. I was going to add again, there's a bit of, I think, if, especially if you're starting out as a leader in your forest school journey, that there's also anxiety from that in the other way. So you know that feeling where you've got a group and you think, okay, well, they're doing that over there, they're doing that over there, this person's next to me. I did kind of mention that we were going to be doing this activity at some point. Everyone seemed really immersed and busy right now, but I've said I'm going to do it, and if I don't do it, if I don't go, hey everyone, let's all do this now, then maybe people are going to go, hang on a minute, what have I just paid for? I've just paid for, like, you know, just playing in the woods.
Mucking
what's
around.
That about?
Just mucking around.
And the leader hasn't shown me any kind of amazing bushcraft skills, and I haven't made anything to take home, so what is the point of this? And I'm not going to book in again, and all those anxieties that go in your own mind.
But that kind of ties into, I mean, we've touched on it before when we talk about people starting, and that but that doesn't just exist in the session, in that sometimes people, I feel like, make a rod for their own back if they advertise, we are reading this story, you know, on, you know, I feel like, if this is a separate thing, but I feel like it, can get it off my chest, it's not forest school if you're advertising a full timetable of the session before the session has taken place, because where is the child-led-ness in that? You've then got to explain to people.
I think you could say, I will be doing that, but of course, as well, at the same time, you could be doing your own thing.
But then that ties into, if you have advertised very heavily, like, we're doing, you know, as everybody does, it flouts copyright and says, we're doing the Gruffalo this week, and we're making Gruffalo this, and then we're doing that, and then we're doing that. And so, actually, the people that are enticed by that advertising are coming expecting that. If you said that, you know, we do a free play thing and with a bit of a Gruffalo theme, that's very different. It's when it's like, we're making this and we're making that.
Do you know what I was thinking? I was as you were saying that, I was like, I wonder if we do that, not through advertising it online or on a leaflet or anything, but by saying to a group at the end of the session, oh, next week, should we do a bit of this? Okay, cool, yeah, we'll do that. And so therefore you've committed to an idea 7 days before. But a parent the other day, we were talking about mince pie donuts, so it was last week, and I was setting off with a parent and a child on a bit of a woods wander, and then I mentioned, oh yeah, and we'll have to get the fire lit soon for the mince pie donuts, and then the mum went, oh, thank God you're still doing that, because we've been talking about that all week. But I did think, oh, maybe they will have changed their minds by then, or maybe it won't happen. And I thought, hang on a minute, that shows that parents do understand that we are flexible, that even if we do say 7 days beforehand, we'll probably do a bit of this, that they understand that that might change, and that's probably good.
And that comes to the kind of, you know, I've said one of the biggest things for me doing forest school is thinking in circles and thinking of that cyclical nature of it, as opposed to the linear progression of schooling. And in the linear progression of state schooling, if you miss a thing, you've missed a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking in circles, you just go, all right, do it next week, do it next month, do it next autumn, do it next, you know, we're going to be here, hopefully, touch wood, for 80 odd circles of this sun. Let's not rush and go, Jesus Christ, we didn't make snowmen this year.
Yeah.
Oh God, you're like, you've got 79 other ones.
Yeah.
kind of let it go. And that freedom, I think, then, once children and parents get into that, as you say, it is proper forest school, to be like, oh, I get this, I get that it might be next week, and I get that's then freeing. And I think that's when you get deep play, because you don't have to go and check what does everything do. You've got the freedom to go, I'm going to get really deep in this mud kitchen today.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe metaphorically, maybe I'm actually going to get stand deep in the mud kitchen today.
Yeah.
You know, and that freedom to you know.
Because it's taking up the opportunities that the landscape is giving you, and the weather and, you know, the elements. Which you wouldn't necessarily be able to do if you have decided in advance it's going to be this, that, and the other.
That's, I mean, and that leads on, one of the things that I've written down is noticing a nature connection, because in that moment of boredom, in my head, the stereotypical moment of boredom is a child has finished, you know, they've come out of flow in whatever they were doing, and they almost, it's almost like you wake up and they're stood in the middle of lots of play happening, and they're just scouring the landscape and looking partly at children's play, partly at the play space, but that moment is also when they might do some nature connection and assess that, hang on, that tree looks different today, or If they
accept and embrace the boredom, calmly. Yes. I would add to that 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 moment is a potential trigger for some children. Yeah. So that's a big transition, isn't it?
That's where I'm advocating boredom as a moment of reflection and pausing and doing those things. But I agree, for some children and for some adults, that's a horrendous situation.
Yeah.
But, and again, going back to our... thing on perseverance and working through things, and to deny children the opportunity to be bored is, you know, very damaging. To go, don't worry, I'm going to plan the whole thing, and if I see anybody even starting, that's the one that gets me, when you can see children starting to get to the end of something, and rather than letting it go to a complete end, and okay, so they finished with that one, let's go to the board, let's I wonder what's going on over there, that when it starts to tail off, some adults feel the need to just go, "Ooh, we've had bad transitions before, let's get on to the next thing, and let's never quite finish that, and let's, you know..."
It's a hard balance, that, isn't it? Because it is. if you're dealing with children who do have a lot of issues with transitions, then you can't, then there is, I don't know, it's a tricky one, because there's something to be said then for... because they will often bring it up themselves. They will sense that something's coming to an end, and they'll go, "So, what do you reckon we should do after this?" And, but I think the way that we probably both deal with it is to take it back to ourselves. So if the child is calm, but you can see it's about to be an issue, I'm not talking about big episodes of loss of control and dysregulation in transitions here at all. I'm talking sort of smaller scale, but children who do have, you can see they have that need to know what is coming next. That you can, I think I've noticed you doing, and I definitely do it, in terms of, "Oh, I'm not sure, but I feel a bit cold, so I might play a running around game," I feel a bit like just having a sit and a relax now, or I'm going to have a drink. Exactly. And then actually what you're doing is kind of sensing kind of what they need, or you're
reflecting it back at them as if it's you, because it might be me, but it's partly you're kind of reflecting what you can see them sort of shivering, and you then you might go, "I reckon I need to run." And then there's also that thing of, so the introductions to play are quite difficult from a dead stop, from nothing into like,
"Oh, those moments are so icky.
I've got to try and get into that." And so
they feel icky for you, and that that gives you an insight into how it feels for them. That kind of like, "Oh, what are we doing?" It's like that.
And the closest thing I can relate it to as adults is when you go to like a work training event, and how do you start a conversation with the person sat next to you, because you definitely sit there for a little bit going, "Right, am I going to be a really chatty person today, and I'm going to go and just go like, 'Hey, where do you work, what do you do,'" which is horrible, because you're going from a dead stop, or do you wait until something happens and you kind of use that as a jumping off point to go, "Oh, I've got the projector in," "I've been to some real dry training," but stuff like that, where you think about that, how much easier that is as an adult to go, "Right, that's a shared experience we both just had there. I'm going to use that now to talk to you, and it'll be less awkward." And for children, walking up to an existing policeman and robbers game and joining in is really hard, versus you as an adult engage in sort of inviting some sort of big play of like, "I'm gonna go be a rabbit, who wants to come and do it?" and then
everyone goes, "No, I'm not interested." And you're on your own, and you know you are, you're on your own. I would agree with you, thinking about it, those are moments of nature connection, because everyone kind of stops, everyone feels a bit weirdly uncomfortable inside, there's like there's a ball of energy and someone's dropped it, it's like ping pong, ping pong, ping pong, and everyone just stands there, and then you look to the environment and you go, "Oh yeah, check out, the trees are already waving," or "Look at the bird's nest," or you know, those are the... Yeah, there should be kind of... Well, at drama school, right, you'd call it like circles of concentration. So, and we did this exercise. Oh, it was deep. I've forgotten all about this.
Yeah.
Oh, Hilary Wood, if you're listening, let's chat about circles of concentration, my head of acting, right? So you had to... You'd be in the drama studio and you'd be sitting down, and you would cross-legged on the floor, and you imagine that you've got a circle of concentration around you, which is like really small, so just past your body, and you just send out your concentration to that kind of circle around you, and then you increase and increase the circles of concentration until you are taking in the whole space and other people, and your awareness is massive.
You can see the Matrix.
You can see the Matrix, man, and then you can dodge bullets, and it's amazing. But I wonder whether it's a bit like that. You know, when you're in flow...
Mm-hmm. You're zeroed
in. Yeah, you are. And just, it almost... Yeah, you might be in flow with another person, but it's more... likely that you're in flow by yourself, and there might be someone over there, and you're kind of there in your periphery, but you're on it with what you're doing. And then that moment where, yeah, you come out of it, and your circle of, if you let it, if you allow those moments to linger, that is when your circle of concentration can become wide enough. And I think with a lot of children, actually, now that I'm saying this, you know those moments where you might go on a walk with some kids and you go, oh, okay, I've noticed a nature thing here, which I could point out to some children, and this could be a really nice little moment for them. Hey, check out that woodpecker over there. This is really, look at that. And then sometimes children are like, oh yeah, look at that, that's really cool. Oh, why is it doing that? Blah, 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 blah. Have a nice little chat, nice little nature moment.
How perfect.
Other times, you will do that and they'll go, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean?
They don't
even notice it because their circle of concentration is not that wide, and they can't necessarily ping it backwards and forth with that elastic band. They can't stop. Like, I'm fixed in this level of concentration right now. It's me and the stick and the tree that I'm hitting, it's me and my feet walking on the ground, and it can't extend beyond that. So you can point to that thing over there all you want, but I'm just not capable of noticing it. Do you know what I mean? Have you noticed those moments where you...
Yeah, and it's, as you say, it's kind of, that is one of the things about having, you know, the landscape and the natural environment as another teacher almost, is that they, if you were being a teacher about it, you would say, right, I won't show them the woodpecker until they've completely finished and have their attention focused on the thing.
Nature doesn't... I would use a tambourine or a
you'd
counting
bring them
down
to a stop, and then you would say, right, now direct your attention to that. But because nature doesn't give a fuck, it just goes like, whatever you're doing now, there's a woodpecker, or, you know, like, the wind is going to blow suddenly now, and that doesn't meet you halfway at all.
That's where you get a little child who was really keen to see the woodpecker, but it took them a bit too long for their circle of concentration to extend that far, because they were too busy just focusing on not falling over. And then, tree, what do you mean by tree? Oh, tree, okay, which tree? That tree? Oh, it's gone now, sorry, you missed it. Where is it? I want to see it. You can't. But I want to. Just can't.
Nature doesn't give a fuck, mate.
It's just gone now.
Nature doesn't.
And then
give a
weeks
fuck.
Later, they're still going, can we go to that area of the woodland to see the woodpecker?
But it's static.
It's
that's
not
like,
there
can we
anymore,
see it there?
Mate. You missed it. I can't, you know, and it really intrigues me to think, what are they imagining in their head? Because that little tiny child definitely doesn't know what a woodpecker looks like. So they're not going, oh yeah, I have a picture of a woodpecker in my head, and now I'm going to see it in real life. Like, they don't even know the concept of woodpecker.
Yeah.
So, God, that must be a very strong feeling. That's I'm going to learn a new thing, and I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
And I can't see it.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, if you think about that and how difficult that is, if you're in flow, that, you're in the middle of flow and someone goes, look, a flim-flam, right? Because that's the same level, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to make a decision, or your brain is trying to make a decision on, is a flim-flam like a stick that's slightly bent, or is it a dragon that is going to eat me, right? And you have to make a decision on, like, no information about whether you stop what you're doing to look at that woodpecker. And if you're in some deep play of something else, then that doesn't seem as appealing. Or you've got to take a gamble and go, yeah, but I'm pretty comfortable with what I'm doing, versus kind of getting out there.
If you like this podcast and want to support more episodes, you can donate through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/children of the forest to show your support for the Forest School podcast.
I do think one of the things that I would like to touch on in terms of deep play and shallow play is, and boredom actually, I think it's more boredom, is there's a kind of trend recently with the increase in, actually no, I would say it's flipped recently, but there has been a growing trend of like with increased social media and increased, you know, TV on demand and increased, you know, I mean, you can't hold a conversation with me now without looking at your phone.
Stop, I've put it down now.
No, but what I mean is, we don't allow ourselves to be bored. Mm. I would say very recently, there's been a bit of a shift back where you see a lot more people are going, actually, I've quit social media because I don't think it's healthy.
I'm having a break, or
I'm going minimalist or whatever it is. But in general, not allowing ourselves to be bored has been a growing trend over however many years. And in John Gatto's work, he's talking about that in a broader sense of saying that because we don't ever allow ourselves to be bored, what we're doing is raising consumers, not just of goods, but of entertainment and of services. And the ability to entertain yourself in moments of boredom or moments of rest is incredibly valuable because, in general, it costs little to no money, it is good for your brain, and it I don't want to say it doesn't stimulate an economy or whatever, but if you make something that holds people's attention, you want them to be constantly dependent on that drip feed.
I need help.
Yeah, because the second we're kind of, I'm bored. And that's another thing where I think schooling doesn't help. You know, I say schooling. The cat's out of the bag. I don't like schools. But
really? You don't like schools?
I keep it very well hidden. God. I'm very,
Get out.
You know me. Cards close to my chest. I don't have to be outspoken. But that it doesn't... It's adding to that cycle of like...
Don't, man. I think you need to stop talking because I'm in a depressed state. As I said to you about capitalism.
But then, okay, so the positive then is that at Forest School, we are encouraging children to be self-sufficient in their entertainment, right? And I think that is so underrated as a skill, but we're facilitating children doing that. And the children that are, here you go, I'll poke you up, the children that are self-sufficient in their entertainment and can do deep play and can do that, consume less resources, right? It's a massive thing at the moment. We need to consume less resources. They are not contributing to, you know, stuff being shipped all around the world and all of the stuff that comes with that. They're not as susceptible to I don't say outside ideas because that makes it sound like you want to run like a little cult. But what I mean is they're not being spoon-fed ideas all the time. And, you know, you take someone back. That's why I think, actually, things like... what I would say, very traditional Forest School games like Hunters and Rabbits, you could take that back 500 years and you could play exactly the same game with children.
Not that we're saying that the olden days were but
what I'm saying is games have lasted because
well, they're primal, aren't they? It's tapping into
but they're not, they're different to, what I mean is they're different to, and we've had this, how many, I mean, I named all of the in Paw Patrol the other day. I've never seen it, but the amount of play that has happened here, and I'm not saying that children acting out play that they see on TV is bad, but what I mean is, you know, they were so deep in that lore, and they were so, but because it was being given to them, it was fixed.
Right.
Marshall could not do this thing. You know, Sky could not do this thing. You want to see how cool
and
I am, guys?
Yeah,
you
and
know.
Often there can't be two Skies.
No.
I want to be Sky too. There can't be two.
Because it is spoon-fed as like, this is how it works, not this is what you can do with it. There, you know, because it exists as a law, as a written down, you know, or not written down, as an animated kind of line in the sand, children aren't given the freedom... And they struggle then to go, well, how do I make this play work if it's not going to work exactly like it does on the TV? Then how does that play work? Whereas, you know, I'm making sweeping statements now, but that's why I think some things like Hunters and Rabbits or Cops and Robbers or, you know, Hide and Seek, they're games that are adaptable and they fit the needs of a group and that, you know, everyone's got some sort of ownership over them and those things. And that's deep play. Because you're really manipulating a thing, and the thing is the idea, you know, but you're able to go, what can this idea do for me? Yeah. As opposed to being given the, here is the Paw Patrol idea, what does it do? And once you've finished with it, just chuck it in the bin.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot, haven't we, about like children adapting games like that, where they go, hang on a minute, okay, we're going to play again, but this time we're going to add a rule, okay? We're going to add a rule, we were doing this yesterday. Mm. This time, if one person, and often you, that's where you just nod and smile as the child in their own imaginary world is they're talking to you,
so 45
but they're going,
minute speech.
And then the thing, and then but except if it's Thursday, in which case, blah, 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 and you're like, okay, should we start? Because I have no idea.
Or stuff that,
oh,
and actually, that being able to like play test stuff and it not work.
Yeah.
So going like
and experiencing
and quite,
failure through
yeah,
that. It's like this was
often,
my idea. I put it out to all of you guys who are playing. We all went, yeah, cool, and ran with it, and it flopped. And it completely yeah. flopped, and you just have to, and you just go, oh, okay, cool, let's try.
And
this
learning part. that it's not like, not a level playing field, but that if you make a load of rules that are like, oh, and also I've got this imaginary gun, so if I say pow, even if you're really far away, that's me shooting you, and you have to stop for 45 minutes, and people just going, no. And I've heard people talk about the difference between another comparison that I like to make is board games versus video games, in that a video game has what?
Well, no, because I just had a very strong memory of I don't know if this is what you're going to say, but I'll pitch in quickly about like changing board game. Like if you play a board game, you play it loads and loads and loads,
yes!
and then you change the rules
yes!
because you get bored of it.
Yes.
So Monopoly was that. One summer holidays, me and my little gang of mates, we all lived in this cul-de-sac, and so we could safely walk to each other's houses all the time. So we just like shifted yeah. around. And
you
my
grew
house,
up in Bugsy Malone, didn't you?
Yeah,
in that,
that's right.
In that film.
So Monopoly was at my house. And so we always played Monopoly at my house. And then we developed this new rule of Mad Monopoly, we called it. So you deal out right. everything. So you deal out all the property, all the money, all the hotels and houses.
Right.
And then you just decide what you do with it. So you still go around the board.
Incredible.
So you end up with like a billionaire and people just going bankrupt straight away. So it's really high emotional.
Wow.
Very big.
Funny that reflected itself in the real world.
I know.
I mean, wouldn't that be weird?
It'd be mental, wouldn't it? And then it would always end up with a massive row. There'd be some interesting like bartering moments, a lot of like a bit more like diplomacy, like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
well, I'm completely broke, so if you give me like 500 quid now, like, I'll give you, when you land on my hotel, I won't charge you, okay? Because there's no
sharks.
Rules.
Yeah,
all
yeah.
of that kind of stuff would happen. It was all very social, and that was really, really fun, and I loved it until someone would have an absolute hissy fit, and someone else would go, this is fun, this is so without rules that I'm now going to go, magic money tree, and just throw all of the pieces all over my living room, right? So the money would just be flying through the air like this, and then they'd all go, bye then, Gemma, and run, and I'd just look at my living room
incredible.
With a magic money tree where someone's been like keeping their money on the curtain rail for fun and pegging it to stuff and then wanging it all over the place, and I'd have to tidy it up, and they'd all go, yeah, it's sunshine, now, bye, we're going. But yeah, that was my thing. Is that what you're going to say?
Well,
video games,
it's similar to what
it.
I was going to say, in that there's, you know, a board game works because you are collectively agreeing to play by the rules.
Yeah.
The game does not catch fire if you move six places when the dice rolled four.
Yeah.
Right? But socially,
yeah.
you have to, you know, it's that thing. Whereas a video game, if there is a hard wall on something, there is a hard wall on something. Mm. And unless you're a seven-year-old hacker that's going to open up the code and make it so that doesn't work. But then I think you are seeing now a rise in what I think is a more beneficial type of game, which is things like, but it doesn't work for games companies, so that's why they have to try and move around it. But things like Minecraft that don't necessarily have a goal.
Yeah.
They are open world games without a storyline that just go, here is a physics simulation, play with it.
Yep.
See what you can do with it. It's the essence of deep play. Mm. And it's very different, and I don't think enough people give it credit for, like, Mario is you move from the left to the right, and you complete this in the set way, right? But because Minecraft and games like that, they're basically Lego, they are just, explore this, play with it, see how deep you can get into it, and that is a different type of play, and so...
Yeah, it's very immersive.
You know,
but that's also the downside of it, so having a seven-year-old who is at that stage big time, like he blooming loves it, we don't have it, and other children that he knows, parents are going through quite a tough time with it, and I would definitely agree that it is facilitating that type of play, but there's something about it being, I don't know, I sometimes wonder, am I like a stuck in the past, unrealistic, fuddy-duddy fear, like Luddite, right? That just hates technology. Because I don't hate technology, I hope, I'd like to think. But for me, there is a difference with how immersive it is. You know that thing that I was talking about transitions? So you come out of deep play and where you've been in flow and you're really in that other world, and then you come out of it. And some children, that's really hard. Mm-hmm. But you're not, if it's not through a screen, if it's not through a computer game, then you're probably a bit like sleep. You're probably going to be jogged out of it by some external factor.
Mm-hmm. It's dinner time. It's you know, it's time to brush teeth.
Or,
it's...
or if you're out, you know, if you're outside. I mean, less of an adult imposition, more of a kind of, I heard a noise, and, or another person ran up to me and said, hey, come do this, and so you jogged out of it. Yeah. Whereas when you're immersed in a screen-based thing, it's a lot harder to naturally have that broken, and so it's more of a wrench. You know that thing we were talking about with the roots of your engagement stretching and going deeper and deeper and
deeper.
The tendrils, and then when they're ripped away from you, very suddenly, which they
it's like
are
whiplash, mental whiplash,
it's like
isn't it?
Pain. So if you're and it's completely adult led, then the end of it, unless it's the battery running out or the internet going down.
But those are hard things for children
still,
to understand.
Yeah, exactly, and they're still very abrupt. They're not kind of like, oh, I can hear somebody running towards me, and I can hear that they're shouting my name, and I can hear that they're gonna, and now they're showing me that there's another play opportunity. It's different. It's just like there's a thing which is really engaging, and then there's nothing. There is
what you need is a
nothing.
Laptop that slowly just gets darker as the battery dies. It doesn't. So you're still like trying to desperately trying to. I think I can still see. I think I can still.
That would be good. You've just invented a new thing. Definitely.
Just put a resistor
because
in the plug.
Because that's what all the parents that I know.
Honestly,
there needs to, because you know, like on Audible, the sleep timer goes quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter in a really gentle way. I only noticed that when I put it on during the day when I was doing some exercise, and so I noticed it does it in a very gradual, subtle way. So it's really gentle. Mm. That's what they need to do, because it is like pain. You know, if you've been the parent of a 7-year-old or older, and you're going, it's time to turn that off now. Whatever they're doing, whether they're just watching telly or whatever.
I think that would be true
and
of
they
Lego
find
as well,
that
though,
hard.
Isn't it? You know, something that's older than that.
No, it's not.
You don't think so?
No. It's not the same.
You can't see, but Gemma's got a real pained look on
it's
her face.
It's not the same,
like, real, like she's eaten a bag of lemons.
It's really hard, because then you want to be open and flexible and let children, you know, especially with Minecraft, like, I don't have anything against the game itself, but if you're a parent of a child who finds it very difficult, I think most children do, they're like, go, oh, okay, I know my limits, I know that I should not spend too much time on the screen, and I should interact with other real humans, and I should probably eat and go to the toilet, you know. I have heard parents say they will pee themselves while they're playing, you know, that's not good. You wouldn't do that if you were playing, actually, you wouldn't pee yourself, but you would poo in the garden. That's what you would do in the olden times, so I'm told.
What are you on about?
Right, in the olden times.
That just came completely out of left field. We were like having a real thing
garden.
About like
you
screen time.
The, that's what
and
you
just
do.
Went, do a shit in the garden, mate.
Or, okay, so the equivalent of it is, I'm outside, I'm really immersed, oh, I really need the toilet.
Do you need
I was
to,
gonna
is
say.
Is this a story? What have you done?
Oh, probably.
No. What have you,
yeah, we always do.
What have you internalised?
We used to poo in
I'm
the
really
woods.
Worried because I
not
work outside
garden.
With you.
I don't poo in the woods here. But when I was with my gang in the woods when I was a kid, we would poo in the woods all the time, because it's like, you're not going to go home, you're not going to finish the game. It would be literally, they're pooing behind that tree. They carry on the game while they're doing a poo, they're still chatting, and then you just carry on going, don't you? But you don't poo yourself, which you might do if you were playing Minecraft. That's what I'm saying. Levels of engagement too deep with Minecraft. You will literally poo yourself rather than... We found the title for the podcast. We didn't know what this episode was going to be about.
Right, what's your plug? What are you calling it?
Poo in the woods. Poo your pants or poo in the woods? Question mark. Yeah? That'll start a really good debate.
Just no context. People are going to have to listen to like 45 minutes of like quite serious debate before they go, yes, we said it was about shitting in the woods, but it doesn't seem to have come up yet. This seems quite mature. This seems like two educational professionals.
Oh,
they can't possibly be talking about shitting in the woods.
Yeah.
I think that I...
Levels of engagement, call it that.
Look, I don't think we've touched on half of what we wanted
well,
to
touch. Well, it's the time
out,
to go now, because
but I think
I need to wee in the woods. In the toilet. Oh. I need to wee in the toilet.
Okay. We can't end every podcast like that, though. There needs to be a different...
I know, it's because I drink loads of coffee before we start and during. Okay, let's end it in a different way. What did you want to say? Have you finished it?
No, people are just going to... It's gone now. I can't come...
It's finished.
I can't come back from...
Okay.
Bye.
Happy Christmas.
You can visit Children of the Forest in person and get incredible face-to-face training on a range of different topics, whether you're a full-time forest school teacher, a classroom teacher, or senior management. Visit childrenoftheforest.com for details and to book on to all the upcoming training.